following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome. It is Monday, August 12th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome back for another week of shows here from beautiful Florida, where we are live from Port St. Lucie, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. We're right here in Florida on the, we're on the East Coast, right? I'm not sure where I am, but we are somewhere in Florida, and we're glad to be here at the home of Kyle Vogt with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We're going to be talking to him at half past the hour, talking about how cops say legalize drugs. We got to end this prohibition, folks, and we'll tell you why at half past. But the big news over the weekend, oh my God, the entire marijuana reform community. We've got two big stories here. The first one, of course, Dr. Sanjay Gupta from CNN, the chief medical correspondent, the esteemed neurosurgeon, coming out with his documentary, We, where he showed some fantastic stories of patients gaining so much medical benefit from cannabis. We're going to talk about that in the Radical Rant because, you know, the Joker to my Batman, Kevin Sabet, well, he had to weigh in on this, and he's trying to spin it as pro-Project Sam. I'm going to debunk the hell out of that when we get to 45 past. Also, the other big story today, Attorney General Eric Holder gave a speech to the American Bar Association today calling for an end to mandatory minimum sentences and other major sentencing reforms to end the mass incarceration, which we all know is largely due to the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. So we're going to talk about that in Behind the Headlines today, so stick around for that. We've also got some music for our Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes. We're going to give you a great classic from Gertrude Michael called Sweet Marijuana. I know it's one of Lively Libra's favorite songs, so I pulled it up just for you, Libra. And we're going to start the show, of course, with our 420 radio news headlines. There are more headlines than just Sanjay Gupta and Eric Holder today. We are also going to be talking about some stories coming out of some of the other states, including Denver, Colorado, where they're going to be taking a look at the marijuana industry and how 39 different issues that they want to solve with the marijuana sales. We're going to talk about Rhode Island decriminalization and what change that has made for marijuana consumers. We're also going to bring you another sad tale of Child Protective Services stealing the kids of law-abiding marijuana consumers. All that's coming up on today's Russ Belville Show, live from Florida. Thanks for joining us, and log on to 420radio.org. Become a VIP member. Help support our efforts today. We're right back with the news after this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.
Everywhere you go in Washington State, things are greener than ever. Why? Because last November, Washington voters made adult recreational use of cannabis legal, which is why the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup is coming to Seattle once again to salute Washington's historic victory. If you love cannabis, then get yourself over to the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup on September 7th and 8th as the marijuana community gathers in force to celebrate our newfound freedom. Meet the businesses of the emerging cannabis industry. Learn about cultivation, topical oils, concentrates, edibles, and more. Sample dabs, buds, and delectable more morsels of cannabis cuisine. Then rock out on Saturday night at our Smokin' Hot concert featuring Slightly Stupid and Redman. And of course, on Sunday evening, we present the U.S. Cannabis Cups for the top indica, sativas, hybrids, edibles, and concentrates of the great state of Washington. Plus, we honor professional traveler and outspoken cannabis advocate Rick Steves with the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award. Come to Fremont Studios on September 7th and 8th in Seattle for a historic celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis community.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Monday, August 12, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Eric Holder seeks to cut mandatory minimum drug sentences from CNN.com. The Justice Department will no longer pursue mandatory minimum sentences for certain low-level nonviolent drug offenders, Attorney General Eric Holder said Monday, noting the nation is coldly efficient in jailing criminals, but that it cannot prosecute or incarcerate its way to becoming safer. The centerpiece of Holder's plan is to scale back prosecution of certain drug offenders, those with no ties to large-scale organizations, gangs, or cartels. He said they would no longer be charged with offenses that, quote, impose draconian mandatory minimum sentences. Holder said the nation must confront the reality that once people of color are in the criminal justice system, they, quote, often face harsher punishments than their peers. He called it unacceptable, shameful, and unworthy of the U.S. legal tradition. Holder said the U.S. prison population has grown by almost 800% since 1980, and federal prisons are operating at nearly 40% above capacity. Holder said overcrowding at the federal, state, and local levels is both ineffective and unsustainable. He said it imposes a significant economic burden totaling $80 billion in 2010 alone, and it comes with human and moral costs that are impossible to calculate. CNN's Gupta now okay with marijuana use, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. CNN's Sanjay Gupta says he spoke too soon in opposing the medical use of marijuana in the past and that he now believes the drug can have very real benefits for people with specific health problems. Dr. Gupta, the network's chief medical correspondent and a brain surgeon, detailed his change of heart in an interview Friday and in an article for CNN's website titled, Why I Changed My Mind on Weed. He narrates a documentary on the topic that aired on the network Sunday. Dr. Gupta said he didn't look hard enough at research on the topic and found some new research that had been done since then. He was encouraged to look into the issue further upon meeting a 5-year-old girl in Colorado for whom medical marijuana has sharply cut down on the amount of seizures she had been suffering. Quote, we have been terribly and systematically misled for nearly 70 years in the United States, and I apologize for my own role in that. End quote, he wrote. Dr. Gupta said he doesn't want people to apply his change of heart to the issue of recreational marijuana use. As a father, he said he wouldn't allow his children to smoke marijuana until they are adults. If they want to, he'd urge them to wait until their mid-20s, when their brains are fully developed because of studies that show the drug can damage young people. Rhode Island police write about 850 tickets for marijuana, from USA Today. Police officers have written about 850 tickets under the new Rhode Island law that classifies possession of small amounts of marijuana as a civil violation, state officials said. The Providence Journal reports that between April 1st, when the law took effect, and the end of July, magistrates levied more than $110,000 in fines for possession of an ounce or less of pot against 663 adults and 92 juveniles. The state has collected about $61,000 of those fines so far. State police issued the most tickets, followed by officers in Providence, Warwick, Cranston, and Pawtucket. Denver Council to settle 39 issues around new retail pot framework from the Denver Post. With legislation pending on whether to ask Denver voters to approve a 5% retail tax on marijuana sales, the Denver City Council on Monday will consider setting a host of rules and regulations for the new industry. Councilman Paul Lopez has been pushing an amendment requiring that retail marijuana stores be at least 2,500 feet from each other and 2,500 feet from a school, child care center, or drug and alcohol facility. The distance rule now for medical marijuana dispensaries is 1,000 feet. Children taken from medical marijuana prescribed parents in California, from RT.com. A family from Southern California is suing the city of Coronado after their children were taken away for nearly a year because their father admitted to legally smoking medical marijuana. The lawsuit alleges that police officers were called to investigate the residence after being told the family was running an illegal daycare center. But police found no pot or a daycare facility for that matter. 3 days later, however, agents with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services returned to the residence and seized the couple's two children, ages 4 and 2. Although the parents tried to take appropriate measures to have their children returned, their attempts proved unsuccessful for nearly a full year. During that span of time, defendants from HHS allegedly lied to the court, the family's attorney said, and insisted that the children were in danger. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, August 12, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to take a look at the speech today by Attorney General Eric Holder calling for an end to mandatory minimum sentences in certain drug cases. We'll tell you the quirk of the law that's going to allow that to happen when we come back. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. Be back after these messages. Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack Go!
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And on today's show, I want to talk a little bit about the Eric Holder speech that everyone's talking about. He spoke to the American Bar Association today in California, and the speech is gaining, you know, major headlines in the drug reform community. CNN.com titles it, Eric Holder Seeks to Cut Mandatory Minimum Drug Sentences. And in the story here, the interesting part is that he's calling for an end to mandatory minimum sentences for drug offenders, but not all drug offenders, just certain ones who have no ties to large-scale organizations, gangs, or cartels. And the first question that comes to mind for those of us that work in the marijuana reform movement is, what is a dispensary? Is a dispensary one of these small-time people that you don't want to have a mandatory minimum for? Or is a dispensary a large-scale organization? Is a dispensary a gang or a cartel? It'll be interesting to find out how the Holder Department of Justice moves forward on these prosecutions of some of the raids that have taken place in the medical marijuana states. Now, in doing some research on this story, I was very curious about how they were going to get around the mandatory minimum sentencing. This is federal law passed by Congress in the late 80s, 86 and 88, a couple of laws that were passed that imposed these mandatory minimums. Thank you, Joe Biden. And the mandatory minimum sentences basically say that if you're caught with this amount of cocaine or this amount of heroin or this amount of marijuana or a certain number of plants, you get a certain amount of time that a judge cannot lessen, that you cannot get early release for. You must serve that mandatory minimum. So how in the world is someone who is being brought before the court, being charged with growing, say, 1,000 plants or having 100 kilograms of marijuana, going to avoid that mandatory minimum? Simple. Don't write it down. That's actually what's in the memo here to the U.S. attorneys. He's directing the U.S. attorneys, when they go through with prosecutions on these drug offenses, to simply not indicate how much weight of drug was seized. Yes, we're going to prosecute someone for transporting 50 kilos of cocaine. We just won't mention the 50 kilos part. Really? It's been that easy all along? All we ever had to do was have an attorney general say, don't write that down. And people could avoid these draconian mandatory minimum sentences? My God, what took so long? But of course, Holder and the Obama administration have to skirt this regulation because it's a law. It's congressional law. And the only people that can change that are Congress. And we've seen President Obama have no luck getting anything through this Congress, either through the filibustering the Senate, the obstructionism in the House, on things like jobs bills. So what chance do you think we're going to get mandatory minimum sentences passed through a Tea Party-controlled Republican House that's all tough on crime and hates the druggies? Of course they have to go through this skirting of regulation and this little trickery to get around this. Now, the other thing that concerns me is whether or not Holder is going to set up guidelines as to exactly who qualifies for this new special wink, wink, nudge, nudge, look the other way on how much weight is involved. Again, I mentioned the dispensaries, but is this going to be codified into some sort of guideline, or is this going to be up to each individual U.S. attorney to decide who's a large-scale organization, who's a gang, who's a cartel? Because if that's the case, I don't hold much more promise for this than I do the Ogden memo, when they said they should not go after people that were in clear and unambiguous compliance with state laws regarding medical marijuana. We found that the U.S. attorneys in California, in Oregon, in Washington, in Colorado, in Michigan, applied their own standards to this as to who was following state law. Interesting, is it not? We have the federal Department of Justice telling us who's following state laws. Kind of thought state courts and state law enforcement was in charge of that. But, you know, I went to public school. What do I know about the Constitution? The other thing we've got in this story is Holder calling for the expanded use of compassionate release for those elderly prisoners who served a significant portion of their sentence and did not commit a violent offense in their drug dealing, which reminds me of our friend Robert Platshorn, who we interviewed today and will be playing on Thursday. Just involved in smuggling, no violence involved whatsoever. He served 29 years of his sentence, and this was before mandatory minimum sentencing. How old are they going to have to be to qualify for this early release? How much of their time will they have to have served? And won't that suck for the people who are just under the limit? I'm sorry, you're only 54. You're still going to have to stay in prison a little longer. Why is it that we would consider, you know, a certain age as when we should be compassionate for people who didn't cause violence, whose only crime was a drug-related crime? Now, again, these are the baby steps, and we have to accept them for what they are. We have to take steps to change this drug war, and it's a marathon, not a sprint. So I do applaud Eric Holder for making these pronouncements. I'm just going to hold my breath until we see how they've actually been implemented at the U.S. attorney level. Let's hope for the best, people.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, sometimes Liebermater surprises me, especially when I'm 2,500 miles away from her. But it's 20 after the hour, and you know what that means. Well, in the Mountain Time Zone, it's 4:20, and all around the world, it's 20 after, and that means we have something very special to attend to. You attend to it, too. We'll be right back after this with some Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes.
If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those.
I don't know anything about government. Luckily, Terry Joyce does. She tells me what to think, say, and do. Terry Joyce was a carnival freak for years. I'm not wearing any pants, and Terry Joyce is going to fight for my right to get them back. That's why I'm asking you to watch the Hollywood Hempers Hour with Terry Joyce. Trust me, I medicate.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belleville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everybody, to Roots Monday here. And for today's Roots Monday, I just had to go to the archives. Real busy out here on the road in Florida. So I just went to the archives to pick out a good old song that I know at least one of our listeners really loves. Our good friend Lively Libra out there in the desolate, dry state of Iowa. So I hope this boosts your morale out there in Iowa. This is Gertrude Michael with Sweet Marijuana.
I wait alone here in the Mexican sunlight, but the Mexican sunlight seems so lifeless and cold. Sad and forlorn, I try to find consolation with a mad desperation that I cannot withhold. Soothe me with your caress, sweet marijuana, marijuana. Help me in my distress, sweet marijuana. Please do. a fantasy. And then put me to sleep, sweet marijuana, marijuana. Soothe me with your caress, sweet marijuana.
Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinth-Garnell III. Tonight we revel in the hilarity of acquiring cannabis when miscommunication occurs between the cannabis delivery service and the consumer. The Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company presents the classic David's Not Present piece, made famous by Richard Merrin and Thomas Chong. Enjoy.
Hark. Who goes there?
It is I, David. Pray grant me immediate passage, good sir. I come bearing a package of great import.
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David, as I previously informed you. Make haste in unlatching this portal, for I believe the constable hath cast his visage upon me. I bring you the package you seek.
'Tis David?
Affirmative, my good man. 'Tis David. Now open this door forthwith.
David's not present.
Who would you rather your kids talk to about drugs? You? Or some guy? When your kids find out you've been lying to them about marijuana, who will they trust? Let's have a rational discussion about drug reform. Let's tax and regulate marijuana, restrict youth access, and create safer communities.
Welcome back, everybody. Quick updates on the rest of our week here, coming to you live from Florida. Just wanted to let you know that we've got on Thursday, I'll be flying back to make my way to Seattle for Seattle Hemp Fest. But on Thursday, while I'm traveling, I have a very special episode that's just a one-hour sit-down interview with Bobby Platschorn, the Black Tuna himself. We're going to be talking to him about his new book coming up, Greed and Evil. We're going to talk about Should Grandma Smoke Pot? It's a fantastic interview, a full hour from his home in West Palm Beach. So tune in on Thursday for our special, An Hour with Robert Platschorn. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we've got more of our regular interviews, including Mike G from High Times, the web editor at High Times. He's going to join us with a preview of the upcoming Cannabis Cup and the new issue of High Times magazine. Then on Wednesday, we'll be visiting with Ivan Goldman. He is the author of a new book called Sick Justice, which pretty apropos considering what we've been talking about with Attorney General Eric Holder. And then, of course, this weekend, our live coverage of Seattle Hemp Fest, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the first legal Seattle Hemp Fest. It'll be a huge celebration, and I am so proud to announce the speaking schedule that includes, on Friday, the very first debut premiere speech of our own Herb Thrasher. That's right, Herb Thrasher will be coming to you from the McWilliams stage at 2:50 p.m. on Friday. Then on Saturday, we have got at 6:45 p.m. I'll be speaking at the McWilliams stage from Seattle Hemp Fest. And then on the Sunday Seattle Hemp Fest, I am appearing on a media panel at the Hemposium. This will be starting at 11 a.m. Pacific, running to 11:45, and we'll record that and bring coverage to you later on in the week. Then at, let's see, it's 12:45 p.m. on Sunday, I'm speaking on the main stage, and Herb Thrasher is speaking all the way across the park at the Sealy stage. So you'll have to catch one or the other. You won't catch both. But we'll record all of it for you, and we'll bring it to you right here on 420 Radio.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's 31 after the hour. We are here at the home of Kyle Vogt with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Thanks for having us out here, Kyle.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, and let's talk about how you got involved with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. What's your law enforcement background?
Well, I went in the military to be military police, and my goal was to be a military police officer and then go in civilian law enforcement. What happened was, after serving the military and seeing politics, I just decided I didn't want to go into that direction. So that led me into a different career path, but that was what made me want to be in law enforcement. Spent 4 years in military police. I was on a hostage rescue team. I did weapons instruction, et cetera. We had quite a few busts, such as we'd do DUIs, we'd do security checkpoints. We'd also had domestics, pretty much like every other police officer. And I had that experience, and I really loved serving, but what I don't like today is what the drug war has done is it's changed from serving to protect your community to then going out now and doing something that's actually harming your community via the black market and drug war, which we'll discuss momentarily. But that was my introduction to law enforcement. I went military police to pre-train myself, kind of harden myself, give myself a better foundation, then be a civilian cop, because my idea was I was going to go after bad guys. I mean, bad people. And I wanted to be a pretty tough dude so I could take care of these people. But I never believed I'd be going and harassing people and just trying to get people on drugs, especially like today with teenagers. Mm-hmm. And every time a cop pulls a kid over, at least the ones I talk to, first thing the police ask them is, do you have drugs in the car? And I'm just saying, when I looked at cops growing up as a kid, we respected them. So I wanted to be in the military and I wanted to be a cop and I had that respect. And that changed with the drug war. So that was a long answer, short question.
Was there much, did you have much experience or much to inform your opinions about the drug war when you were doing military policing? Is that an emphasis in the military?
Well, where I served in three different locations. I did physical security. So I was in a program that was very particular. It's called a PRP program. We dealt with nuclear, biological, chemical. So we had to always be maintaining a high security clearance. And the interesting thing I noticed is we would have common problems with alcohol abuse. We'd have guys getting DUIs, and that's just not acceptable when you're in military police.
Sure.
So we had a lot of people physically doing things that you were obviously aware they had a problem. But what's interesting to notice is that the only guys who ever got chaptered out of the military for other drug use, it was marijuana. And it was only through a drug screen, a random drug screen.
Right.
So we had soldiers who were great soldiers, great marksmen, everything's great. And all of a sudden, one day, we find out they've been smoking marijuana and they get chaptered out. So we really didn't have a lot of issues with illicit drugs where we were because we're in a more particular branch of the military. But we did see quite a bit of problems with alcohol all the time. I mean, we'd go to the officers club, the NCO clubs, domestics, DUIs, you name it. We had alcohol was the number one thing. Actually made a lot of money through DUIs because we were on federal land and we faced state and local laws. But it was very interesting. Very little issues with drugs in general, mostly alcohol. And sadly, I saw a lot of good soldiers end their careers early because of a random test. And the only evidence was in that test. No behavioral issues,
right.
No indications. So in answer to your question, that was probably my experience was mostly on the road and dealing with DUIs and such as that.
So you get out of the military, you're wanting to go into policing, but what is it that...
that changed when you get out? Did you see that? Wait a minute, we're just busting drug people.
Well, what really happened is the pay scale is very poor for starting out law enforcement. So that was a factor too. So let's move forward a little bit. What happened was, say about 5-6 years ago, my son happened to get arrested for simple possession. Now, knowing that his father was very straight-laced, former military police, et cetera, he didn't want to come and tell me that he had been arrested. Mm-hmm. This is how I found out about LEAP. And this is how I found out that we have a criminal justice system is anything but just. So my son, I have twin sons, and this one son, I get a call, and he's asking me if I'm alone. I find out he's arrested in jail. Okay, I'm going to bail him out. And then I found out it's a violation of probation. I know he'd been prior arrested. When I went in and met with his PO, the first thing out of that PO's mouth was, Mr. Vogt, your son didn't do anything wrong. He's not a criminal. He just did something stupid. He got caught, and it's all about money. And I'm sorry to tell you that. My jaw about hit the ground. An honest PO. And let me just tell you this. Because I had my background knowledge and I happen to have known a former judge, I wrote a letter to that judge, reasoning with this judge, telling him if you enforce adjudication, this person, then what's going to happen? You're going to screw his life up. He'd have mandatory 1-year suspension driver's license, no future college assistance, blah, blah, blah. I was able to get that all withheld.
Wow.
And the PO actually worked with me and the judge, et cetera. Now, that's a rare case.
Yeah.
But what about all these young kids who don't have someone to write that letter, who have that now getting on their record? Because we have a saying in LEAP, you can live with an addiction, but you can't live with a conviction. That conviction is going to follow you everywhere the rest of your life. And what a lot of people don't realize is you lose college assistance just for a drug offense. Rapists and murderers can still get college assistance. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Yeah, so if you got a drug problem, the last thing you want is an education. What?
Yeah, no, you're stupid, right? But I mean, that was my introduction to that, brought me in contact with LEAP, because I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then when I called the attorney general's office off the record, one of the people worked there was telling me about her son being in the system, and it was designed to keep you in. When I asked the PO, and this is an interesting thing, my son had 6 months probation. He was on his 5th month. And I said, now he's got a little time left. Why did you violate him? He said, if we didn't violate him, we'd lose him. This way we get another $200 fine, cost of probation, all these court fees. It's about money. Mm-hmm. I could not believe this. I had been living in a fantasy world thinking that if we arrest somebody, the judge is going to sit up there, listen to the officer. The officer is going to be honest, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, see, my view was that's why I was willing to serve. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to toot my horn, but serving is something, it's a sacrifice.
Sure.
Well, if I'm going to wear that pistol and take that risk, I just feel if I'm going to set a standard, I should live that standard. Mm-hmm. And we pretty much did as MPs, at least the guys I worked with. So when I would see the stuff that I do today and see the corruption, for example, this officer lied in the report. He said my son was driving. What happened? They couldn't go in the one apartment, so they went and sat in their car and they're hotboxing it.
Uh-huh.
He drove by and saw them, a detective, pulled him over, wrote a citation notice to appear. I read the report and he said he saw them pulling into the parking lot. That could have been a DUI or driving under influence, whatever. But the fact is, why lie in your report? And I know my son enough to know, and I read the report and everything, to tell who's lying.
Right.
And it wasn't me just being an ignorant father and believing my son, but I couldn't believe that what I was seeing, the corruption, it was just shocking. And so as I began digging further and further, I began seeing more and more, and I said, I can't sit back here. I've got to do something about this. And I had always been ultra conservative, and I never believed in locking people up for smoking pot. I smoked a ton of it as a teenager, grew up in Hawaii, and then I stopped. Hadn't smoked it since, I'm in my late 40s now. So I never really believed in locking people up, but I thought drugs, absolutely, I locked those people up. They're dangerous. And then the one day I started seeing this black market issue, and that's with LEAP. The whole concept is not just marijuana. We're very pro anything to go in the right direction, but all drugs. The reason why is there's a black market. That's where the crime and violence comes from. You know, as a soldier, I was willing to take a rifle and engage another human, but I didn't want to do it unnecessarily. And who would pick a war? Who would go to fight if you didn't have to? And yet in our country, we're fighting every day. We're causing a war because we made a choice. We've chosen the policy of prohibition rather than a policy of regulation control and the resulting black market that's coming out of it. And we've created that, and we can disable it and take it out just by the stroke of a pen. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
We don't have to fire a single round. I was on a SWAT team. And when you train that way, you want to get in a fight. You want to use your tools, your training. I mean, it sounds messed up, but we kind of, that's our mentality. Mm-hmm. Why would you send those guys in with those weapons if you didn't have to?
And that you know, segues to the point, and Radley Balco reports on this better than anyone, the rise of the warrior cop, this over-militarization of our domestic police forces. And you talk about SWAT. SWAT was invented in the late 60s, early 70s to deal with hostage situations and terrorist plots. Absolutely. And now we're serving warrants with it.
Absolutely. That's something amazing, because I was on what's called SRT, Special Response Team. I was on it for a year. Our SOP, for those who don't know, Standard Operating Procedure, was if one of our road units, if we had a call, if there was a situation, he responded to that. It was outside his general scope of operations, domestic, hostage situation, whatever. Then he'd call us in. Now, we'd be on standby, but we were only to go in if a life was at jeopardy. In other words, we knew when we go in locked and loaded, we had MP5 SD3s, those are built-in suppressed, fully automatic, capable weapons. And, I mean, we could put two shots in the head at 50 meters, no problem. Mm-hmm. So when we go in, we're going in loaded for bear, because we're expecting a fight, and we believe you put 10 against 1. You don't give the odds in their favor, you put them in your favor. But it's for a serious situation. And our rules were, if we even wounded the perpetrator, the subject, that was not considered a successful mission. If one of our hostages went down, oh, that's it. One of our team members, mm-hmm. we're supposed to go in there and be surgically precise, no casualties. That was the goal. Now, we only went in when the stuff was hitting the fan. Today, I can't believe what I see. I see SWAT teams going in for nonviolent situations. There's no history of violence or no knowledge of weapons, no reason for them to think, other than there's a lot of pot plants in that place. But I guess we made those pot plants so valuable by the black market via prohibition. But it's insane. We take a tool that had good use and we abuse it. And that's what's happened today. And that's another thing about LEAP. We not only want to end prohibition of all drugs to get rid of the crime and violence, but then allow addicts to actually get treatment and have a life. But we want to restore respect for law enforcement, because it's been lost through the drug war.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is a big point to me as well. And I appreciated how you talked about wanting, you know, respecting cops when you grew up. You know, I remember watching One Adam 12, you know, and had the same idea that was, right. You know, they were going to get the bad guys, they were going to protect us. And I think the erosion of respect for law enforcement, especially among young people and especially among communities of color, is one of the worst aspects of this drug war.
Oh, absolutely. I have several friends who tell me that every time they're pulled over just because they're of color, mandatory, do you have any drugs in the car? Can I search your car? And I say, and you don't let them, right?
Yeah, right. I say no.
But it's like, I just can't believe it. You know, when I was growing up, I knew the neighborhood cop's name. His name was Scotty. I remembered him to this day. He was a detective. The reason I remember him, because he egged his car one day. and I got busted by him. But, you know, here's the thing. We had parties. We'd be out there drinking, smoking pot, doing whatever. They'd come to the party and say, hey, guys, party's over. Shut off your amps. Break it up. Dump that out. Who's driving? You're not. Get the heck out of here. If we see you again, we're going to take your asses here and we're calling your dad. And that's, we were like, okay, we respect them. We didn't go back. We knew where we could, what we could do, where we could do it. We knew kind of the boundaries, and they respected us. They were like guys who we would call because this guy was knifed or something bad. Today, the cops are the last ones you want to call. I mean, I'm sad to say, I'm former law enforcement. I have the greatest respect. I know the risks that those guys take and how underpaid they are and how it interferes with the family life. I understand that. But, I mean, I didn't think wearing a badge made me above anybody else. I was there to make people safe. That was my view. These cops come in and they have attitudes, and they don't understand anything about protecting and serving. And what's happened is the drug war has corrupted that, because it's all about the quotas. It's all about the drug bust. It's all about, also, an amazing thing is your training. It dehumanizes. Police are routinely taught in their academies that people who use drugs are low life, they're terrible people, they're prone to this or that. So you have this image of anybody who uses drugs in any level, rather than one guy who smokes a little puff to a heroin addict, they're all the same, they're all bad, they're all dangerous, and just who cares if you hurt them, get in the car. I mean, I understand when I was taking a drunk, if we're put in the car and he's belligerent, I don't care if he gets his head bumped as he gets in there, because he's the one choosing to do that, right? I'm not saying that you can abuse people, but that happens. I mean, you don't want to be treated bad. Don't treat people badly. But cops today just, I don't know, they go off the top. When I talk to young people, which is quite often, they tell me, cops always ask me, you have drugs in the car. They feel harassed. They feel intimidated. There's no respect for law enforcement almost whatsoever in what I see. And I'm not just seeing young people. I'm seeing people my age, doctors, physicians, because they look at it and they say, if you're enforcing the law And then you have a double standard. If you're supposed to be honest, right? Honest people catching criminals. There's some honesty, I think, in there somewhere. Then why would you lie in court? Why would you lie about drugs? Why would you do the things you do? Now, I've got off subject a little bit, but going back to the point is the interaction with law enforcement when I was growing up, like you said, 1 Adam 12, they were respectful. I wanted to be like them because they didn't treat people badly. They were decent. In fact, I saw them rescue people. I mean, the cops I knew rescued people drowning when I was surfing. So my idea of being a cop was I was there to catch a thief, somebody who carjacked, you know, those kind of things. Not if you were smoking something. What we cared about is not what you put in your body. It's how you behave and what happens when you get behind the wheel and you drive down the road. You're putting others at risk. That's my duty. So the whole idea is law enforcement needs to, we want to redirect the focus of law enforcement back on to making our community safer by removing violent offenders. I'll give you an example. I don't know, it was quite some time ago, a guy named Ted Bundy up in Jacksonville, a serial murderer, was on the loose. And those communities were in terror, especially anyone who had a daughter up there. Now, I have a daughter going to college, and I can understand that. And when they caught him, there was a great sigh of relief because he confessed all the crimes. They knew they had the guy. Guess what? There are no more murders. Well, when they take a drug dealer off the street, what happens? He's gone. Next guy, next guy, next guy. All they're doing is taking people off and filling up the jails and giving more opportunities for a new entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And all we have to do, and I think, what was that? Didn't we end prohibition back, what was that, 1930? Oh, yeah. And what, it took us all of 13 years to realize that? And here I am in my late 40s, and we're still dealing with this. And the amazing thing is, I talk to teachers. There's no alcohol being sold in schools. When I was a teenager in high school, that's where I sold my weed and picked it up. And we did that stuff. And we wanted to buy beer. We'd say, hey, if I give you $5, will you buy me a, oh, darn it. It was difficult. You know why? Because people wanted to be careful with kids. They're like, okay, you're 18. I could see you can drink. You know, the age then was 18. Right. But what I'm saying is there's laws that people respect. And when people don't respect the laws, they don't abide by those laws. Yeah. And people are starting to see that prohibition is not a respectable thing, just as we found out with alcohol.
Absolutely. Well, folks, it's copsaylegalizeddrugs.com or leap.cc. You can follow Cops Say Legalize on Twitter. And Kyle Vogt, thank you for your service and thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Hey, when we come back, we got time for a radical rant. We're going to talk about Project Sam, Kevin Sabet trying to spin Sanjay Gupta. It ain't going to happen, folks. I'm right here to take him down. We'll be right back after this.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Normal stands for responsible adult cannabis use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, I hope you had a chance to watch Dr. Sanjay Gupta's special on weed yesterday on CNN. If not, I'm sure they're going to be replaying it. You've got to see it. It's one of the best documentaries on medical marijuana that I've ever seen. But the prohibitionists now are furiously trying to spin Dr. Sanjay Gupta's documentary and his apology to their own ends. And, you know, of course, the number one guy on that list that I'm going to be paying attention to is Kevin Sabet and Project Sam. Now, since 1970, marijuana has been classified by the federal government as a Schedule I drug. And that means it has no recognized medical use in the United States. And never mind those 20 medical marijuana states and Washington, D.C. itself, where the federal government operates, that recognize marijuana's medical uses. It also means it has a high potential for abuse, despite ranking lower in addictiveness and toxicity than alcohol, tobacco, cocaine, meth, heroin, oxycodone, Vicodin, Dilaudid, and many more drugs. And unlike all those listed, cannot possibly cause a fatal overdose. And it has no accepted safety for use under medical supervision. Just forget about those tens of thousands of doctors who've recommended it in the medical marijuana states and the old 5,000 years of safe medical use throughout human history. So, CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta rocked the mainstream and shocked drug policy advocates, both pro and anti-marijuana, with his recent apology regarding U.S. medical marijuana policy. He said, quote, "It doesn't have a high potential for abuse, and there are very legitimate medical applications. In fact, sometimes marijuana is the only thing that works. We have been terribly and systematically misled for nearly 70 years in the United States, and I apologize for my own role in that," end quote. Wow, such an esteemed neurosurgeon and television personality pointing out that the emperor wears no clothes? Sounds like the death knell of a prohibitionist policy to me. But the industries that depend on the criminalization of marijuana have been fighting against the acceptance of whole plant cannabis as a legal medical alternative, whether to protect the profits of their products, aka pharmaceuticals, or their services, incarceration and rehab. And no group has been more vocal about the need to continue the prosecution of marijuana users, even medical users, than Project Sam, the alleged smart approaches to marijuana. Founded by Kevin Sabet, a lifelong moral entrepreneur, a former ONDCP staffer, and current shill for the forced rehabilitation of cannabis consumers, Project Sam has repeatedly demeaned the medicinal value of cannabis. The idea, and this is from their website, quote, "Opium has medical value, and it's called morphine. Marijuana has medical value too, but just as we don't smoke opium to receive beneficial effects, we need not smoke marijuana to get its medical value. It is important to distinguish between the whole marijuana plant material and individual components within the marijuana plant. Some constituents of marijuana, including THC, are available today in pill form, such as Marinol." Well, this idea that the chemicals in the plant are medicinal, but the plant itself is not, is one of the prime talking points of Project Sam. It's a plan to reapportion the supermajority public support for medical marijuana to the support of cannabis-based pharmaceuticals. This serves three purposes: making pharmaceutical companies rich, undercutting support for plant marijuana, and maintaining the criminality of plant marijuana that allows for drug courts to force cannabis consumers into rehabs they do not require or want. Now, on Sunday, Dr. Gupta's about-face as a medical marijuana supporter culminated in a CNN documentary called Weed. In the show, a 5-year-old girl suffering 300 epileptic seizures a week is treated with a cannabis extract high in cannabidiol, the non-psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. Her seizures are reduced to 1 per week. A 19-year-old man suffering a rare spastic disorder of the diaphragm smokes cannabis, and his halting hiccup-like speech transforms within 1 minute to the steady voice you'd expect from a healthy young adult. And elderly patients in Israel are shown treating Alzheimer's, pain, and depression with raw plant cannabis. Well, Kevin Sabet and Project Sam are now trying to spin this landmark television program to their advantage. They issued this recent press release following the airing of Weed that characterizes Dr. Gupta's endorsement of medical marijuana as a sarcasm quotes reversal, and going so far as to portray Dr. Gupta's own statements like, "It is irresponsible not to provide the best care we can as a medical community, care that it could involve marijuana," as somehow being support for Project Sam's goal of keeping plant-based medical marijuana illegal. This is from the Project Sam press release, quote, "We are troubled that some of CNN's coverage of Dr. Gupta's views muddies the water on this issue. For example, a headline stemming from Dr. Gupta's upcoming documentary on CNN is, Marijuana Stops Child's Severe Seizures. However, this story is about a child who is benefiting from a non-smoked marijuana extract that does not get her high because it only contains trace amounts of marijuana's active ingredient, THC, and high amounts of non-intoxicating CBD. Because most Americans think of marijuana as the THC-filled smoked substance, this headline is misleading. It would be like broadcasting, opium cures pain for millions of people, instead of acknowledging that morphine, an extract of opium, is the substance at play." Well, notice how easy Sabet dismisses the 19-year-old man who was smoking raw plant marijuana chock full of THC to focus on the little girl using the CBD extract. And Dr. Gupta even delved into the potential for a high created by that young man's marijuana use, the 19-year-old who was smoking pot, and found that not only did he not get high, he was perfectly capable of driving Dr. Gupta around in a car shortly after getting high. Oh, and by the way, opium is used as medicine in America in a tincture form called perigoric. And morphine will get you really, really high. It's also curious how Sabet is now demonizing THC when his own Project Sam website is touting the medical benefit of synthetic THC contained in Marinol pills. Apparently THC is okay when it's by itself in a pill, and CBD is okay when it's a non-smoked extract, but CBD and THC naturally occurring in a marijuana plant, well, that's a dangerous addictive drug with no medical benefit. As for the little girl with epilepsy, she gets her CBD extract from a team of brothers who, empowered by Colorado's constitutional medical marijuana amendment, are growing marijuana plants for her. Project Sam and its board members, particularly Dr. Christian Thurstone in Denver, that rehab entrepreneur that they featured in the Weed documentary, they opposed Colorado's medical marijuana law. If they had their way, those brothers would be a continuing criminal enterprise under Colorado law and subject to numerous felonies, including a 4-year mandatory minimum sentence for sales to a minor. It is more than likely that little Charlotte would still be suffering 300 seizures a week, assuming she would have lived through them. Here's another quote from their press release. "Just because marijuana is a Schedule I drug, it does not mean that medicines based on certain parts of the marijuana plant cannot be approved in the United States." No, that's exactly what Schedule I means. Dr. Gupta did a great job explaining in Weed how legitimate researchers are denied research because of the Schedule I designation. I wrote about this in 2010. There was a New York Times story called "Researchers Find Study of Medical Marijuana Discouraged." Here's the quote from Shirley Simpson, a spokeswoman for NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, quote, "As the National Institute on Drug Abuse, our focus is primarily on the negative consequences of marijuana use. We generally do not fund research focused on the potential beneficial medical effects of marijuana," end quote. And Sabet and Project Sam continue by putting words into Dr. Gupta's mouth. They say, quote, "We fully agree with Dr. Gupta that the medicinal value of marijuana should be studied to develop pharmacy-obtained, legitimate, standardized, non-smoked medications." You know what? I searched Dr. Gupta's essay on medical marijuana, could not find the words pharmacy or standardized or non-smoked. In fact, I saw numerous people in his documentary smoking a non-standardized plant not obtained from a pharmacy, and Dr. Gupta was endorsing their use. However, I did find legitimate three times. I was too dismissive of the loud chorus of legitimate patients. Marijuana doesn't have a high potential for abuse, and there are very legitimate medical applications. And stuck in the middle are legitimate patients who depend on marijuana as medicine. Without the medical legalization enacted in Colorado, the 5-year-old and the 19-year-old profiled in Weed would still be suffering their life-threatening seizures and downing handfuls of stupefying, side-effect-laden, toxic, addictive pharmaceuticals to no avail. When Kevin Sabet tells you he supports research into marijuana's medical value, Even under the best case scenario of the FDA approval process, those young people would be suffering for another 2 to 4 years. That's what Kevin Sabet supports. Hey, that's all the time we got here. Thanks for joining us from Port St. Lucie, Florida, in the home of Kyle Vogt. I'm Radical Russ. Till next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.